Welcome, 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 everyone. This is Coach K, and I am so excited to do another episode of the State of Sales Enablement. And I have with me the one and only Lauren Brownstone. Lauren, my dear, so good to see you. I know no one else can see you, but I can. It's so good to see you.
It's wonderful to see you. Thank you so much for having me today.
I have been following you for a while on LinkedIn, and I've been noticing all your book posts, but also some of your methodology and concepts around enablement, which I've loved. So I know I have a little bit of context on you, but I'd love to have you start out by just saying a little bit about your career, how you got into enablement, what kind of companies you worked for, and what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I started my career in education. I was a teacher for a while, and then I decided I wanted to try my hand at something else. So I went into the corporate world. I found a project management job and kind of naturally just found myself in this broader enablement space. And I did that for about 10 years, and I've recently started my own consulting company.
I love it. So I'm going to ask some nitty-gritty questions because I'm just curious from an enablement standpoint. Larger organizations, like how many salespeople or CSM, revenue people, how many did you support usually on your teams?
So a variety, different on different teams. There were teams of as small as two or three in some areas that I was enabling, mm-hmm. and then teams as big as 150 in other areas.
So mostly in the SaaS world, I know you came from the education place. So are you mostly in SaaS or you kind of do other industries as well?
I do all industries. Most of my experience, however, is in SaaS and real estate.
I love it. I'm curious. Again, my enablement brain's kicking in. Going from the education world, classroom setting, to professional environment, I'm curious of what you've changed in your approach from going from education to enablement, or you literally think it's the exact same thing, it's just in professional world. Like, tell me you think the difference is.
Oh, I think they're completely different things. I went into the corporate world thinking that I wanted absolutely nothing to do with training adults. When I was in the classroom teaching my high schooler, and I was like, this is about relationship building. It's about the promise of something different, getting people to think outside the box and see the white space. And there was all that energy. And in the corporate world, yeah. I was like, I don't want to do that with adults. I know adults. They're not as fun. And then I got there and I saw over and over again what learning and development and training looked like, what enablement looked like in the corporate space. And mm-hmm. in each role I was in each team that I worked with, I found that there was a lack of learning expertise, that specifically folks would get into these roles because they had been in the previous role and now they were in the operations side of supporting that same role. A lot of what we see enablement today, which is great and requires a skill set in that central area or operations itself. So I think as we move towards the skills-based economy, more and more we're seeing that either you have operational skills or you have behavior change skills, or maybe you have scale skills, or maybe you have a hybrid of more than one of those things. But you can't just be an expert in one thing and then facilitate behavior change in that area and find as much success as business leaders keep asking for. And in this world where we're seeing within the next 5 years, 44% of our skills are supposed to be obsolete. We're constantly skilling and upskilling and reskilling our workforce. And we've got to get this right. It's really important. I truly think that enablement and behavior change is one of the most important skill sets of our future economy.
I love it. So you and Jerry Farr would get along really well then, because he's on the same path. Yep. I love it. Yeah. So talking about this whole subject, it's interesting to see where enablers come from. Some come from sales. I came from sales. My other background was business consulting and life coaching. Then you have some who came from marketing, some came from content, some from learning, some from education. There's all these different paths, We did this interesting research group like a month ago, asking a bunch of different enablers across the world, what are some challenges you have? And one thing that came up is very obvious is that we as a community cannot agree on what the heck enablement is and what we should do and what responsibilities are, which means there's chaos with all leadership because they don't know what it is because no one can tell them like a centered, agreed upon definition. And I think that's part of the challenge. But I love that this conversation is happening more often around what you're talking about, because then you're able to identify this is not enablement, this is, right? So in your mind, when you compare, we were talking before the call of like, what most enablers do is this, but what I do is this. Can you talk more about that and saying, okay, here's what most do, but here's what in theory I think should be done?
I think most folks come from the sales world. And they're fantastic at these operational roles. They're fantastic at identifying often what the skill gaps are or what the field needs. And the challenge is how we get there and how we work in tandem or in lockstep with sales leadership to make sure that we are able to be as successful as we can in our roles. So when I look at it, I say, I'm not a salesperson. I don't have a sales background. I've done a lot of work in ops. That's fine, but it doesn't have to be sales ops. My expertise is in changing behavior. So when I work with an organization, they're setting the strategies. They're figuring out the motions. I'm bringing someone else in to help me figure out what those are. Then when it comes to implementing that stuff, managing the change, making sure that we're actually hitting those target metrics at the end of the day, that's my area.
I love it. I agree with you that I don't think that someone has to have a sales background in order to be in sales enablement or any other enablement. How I always say, though, I do think you need to know the game. It's kind of like any other coach. Like, you could have a baseball coach who practices hitting and has never played a game in their life, but is amazing at coaching hitting. You know, they have to know the game. So that's the one thing I'd only add as a caveat is like that part, which I know you know this, but I think that's where people get tripped up is like that one thing, whether it's the CS game, the partner game, the sales game, the game has to be understood or else that behavior you're trying to change is not going to be very effective. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree. And I think that the context of the environment you're working in, it doesn't matter what your area of expertise is. The more comfortable you are with the context, the more successful you're going to be. Earlier, you were talking about how everyone defines enablement differently. I spent a long time on this. I was like, this is the beginning of my book. It should be so easy. Why is it so hard? Even digesting all the ideas that I had and reading everything out there. And I ended up coming up with a multi-pronged bulleted definition.
Tell me.
Oh, you want me to read it to you?
Yeah, I want to read it to you. So we haven't said this, but you probably need to introduce your book. So Lauren's also an author, which is Enabling Enablement. And I'm going to read the title. Executing a strategic learning and readiness function to launch your organization to new heights, which is a cool picture of a mountain on top, which is cool. So please, I'd love to have you read what your definition of enablement.
Yeah. Oh, and fun fact, I used AI to create that image on the bus.
Yes, that's what I like to hear. I love it.
All right. Use a multi-pronged definition for enablement that consists of the following traits. A function within an organization that prepares the people to successfully perform in their role and develop them for their next role. A function within an org that prepares the people to adapt to a change in process, tool, expectation, etc. A partner to the business consulting on myriad performance matters from enterprise level to individual level. The data-driven strategic consultant to the business that relies on proven methods and adult learning to support change to advance the business and bring out the best in its greatest asset, its workforce.
That's great. I love it. I did not disagree with any of those points. Good job.
All right.
I love it. So can we dive into the behavior thing? Because I think this is something I'd love to talk more about. So there's this argument, right, of people talking about how do you measure the impact or the ROI or whatever you want to call it of enablement, right? Which is really, really hard. I literally had this conversation with my CEO last week because he was saying there's not a clear KPI for you guys. I don't know where to put you. I'm like, let me teach you. So I'm curious though, for you, when you're looking at behavior changes, when you have quotas, revenue, sales, and then you have on the other side, behavior change, how do you create that connecting dots thing to saying, like, I know saying this out loud, we do not control all improvements of an organization. There's a lot of teams who are involved with improving sales and revenue. But for enablement specifically, how do you suggest people go from, here's your quota attainment, here's the section enablement had with it, and here's how you connect it. Where's the connection between those two?
That's a great question. So I see it as the org's goals are my goals.
Yep.
Right? That's where I'm trying to get the organization. And so are you familiar with the Kirkpatrick methodology? I should probably explain it for anyone.
Yes, but for those who don't, I do, but please do.
Yeah. So you start with organizational goals, with the metrics that you're trying to target there. And then you funnel down and you say, if that's where we want to end up, what are the behaviors we need to see and get really good at to get those results? Mm-hmm. And then you back it down further and you say, if those are the behaviors I want, what does the intervention look like? Do I need a training? Do I need a job aid? Is this coaching? What comes in there? And then below that, you get to level one, which is more the reaction of your audience, the temperature of the crowd, where folks feel about any given skill or initiative. So I look at where the org wants to go, and we figure out what behaviors are necessary to get there. What do they need to be exhibiting day in and day out to make sure that we hit average deal size is going to go up 15% this quarter, this year, whatever the goal is. And so from there, we have identified those target behaviors. We see where folks are at in a given point in time. And then we figure out what the intervention ought to be. And in intervention, I don't just mean one thing. It's usually a series of things that happens. Because if you just do a training and walk away, we all know that nothing's going to change, right?
Right. So in the past, if you're consulting me and I said, okay, I'm trying to make sure we hit our revenue goals. We have to double revenue this year. What metrics would you say to consult me with and saying, okay, if that's the case, then anyone has control on behavior change. And the metrics you would measure would be X. What would that be?
So I can't come up with that on my own. That's the conversation that we start with. I say, if you want to double revenue this year, how are you planning to do it? What initiatives do you need? Are you going to grow deal sizes? Is this a prospecting play? What are all the different pieces that are happening? And you could have one annual goal that springs out 15 smaller things. There are 15 target skills we need to work in this area. That's a ton of behavior that you need to change for 15 mm-hmm. skills. But if you want to double revenue, now we know exactly where we need to focus.
Well, let's do this then. I'm going to give you a real-time use case because this is something a lot of people are working with. So pipeline gen, prospecting specifically and going into, let's say, VP level, C-suite stuff. So I know there's a ton of skills in that. Do me a favor, pick one that you think would be important and then tell me how would I measure that with behavior.
Tell me again, what's the priority? Where are we heading?
Pipeline generation is the main thing. So four times pipeline of what we need for revenue. Backing it up to a majority of that's going to come from our prospecting, whether it's cold outreach or whatever, investors, partners, whoever. But we really want to focus on the skill of, let's just say, proactivity with the sales rep, that they're doing whatever they need to do, finding who they need to find to develop relationships they need to have more interactions and more contacts within the industry, right? So if that's the skill, what would you measure? What you suggest to measure? And you could suggest three or four things. I'm just curious. What metric would you say we need to measure this? And we know it's changing because of this result.
Well, when you just explained it, you mentioned, I think, three, four, five different skills in there. So each one of those becomes a target skill. Each one of those becomes a target behavior. The ability to have the conversation, the ability to do the pre-work for the call and the research and making sure you're prepared for that. Being able to have that conversation around pain, knowing the tools that we're using for prospecting and using them effectively. Are you creating your own new dashboard every week, or can you just use the one everybody's using, right? We see this in organizations a lot. So it could really be any number of things that we're measuring. And I'm not trying to not answer your question.
It's okay.
It blows up very quickly.
Well, I'm going to keep pushing, hopefully in a good way, because what I'm trying to find is, let's just pick one. Like research, for example, that skill of researching a company, understanding it. So the behaviors are something that I, manager enablement, can observe. So it'd be then a subjective metric that I'm saying, okay, based on how I felt about them, is an example of me saying, your researchability from a scale of 1 to 10 is a 5. A month later, I'd put you at a 6. Is that the metric? Or is there something more objective you use as in an example of you filled out the right fields in Salesforce with the right data I'm looking for? Like, how do you measure the subjective from objective as far as that kind of skill building?
Fantastic question. I think we get as objective as we can possibly be. And we do that for several reasons. We do it because we don't have the time for every manager to rank where every single one of their people are on every target skill every week or even every month. We don't have time for that.
Right.
We also don't want the mess that comes with subjectivity. Because when I go to you as my boss for my one-on-one, you better tell me why I'm only a 5, because I definitely thought I was a 9 and, you know, a 9 or 10. So how do we do that? And so again, in that performance consulting conversation, that's where I say, hey, how do you measure that now? How do you know that they're not good at the research? What is telling you that? And it's funny because very often, and I'm sure you see this too, you listen to the sales leaders, I just know. I hear about it. I saw it the other day. Well, if you saw it once, or if you're hearing about it in general, is that happenstance or is that a trend? And if it's only 1 or 2% of your team that you're just hearing that from or witnessing it with, then chances are that's not the biggest target skill we should be working on. There's something else we should be doing to lift up here.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of goal within this particular topic because a lot of people go by feel. They don't go by data. For example, a sales manager will listen to a discovery call and be like, we need to do a training on discovery. And that's where this whole reactive enablement comes in, is because of gut feel instead of data. And that's why I'm pushing you and saying, okay, how do you identify the data? Because a lot of people don't have any clue of what the heck to measure. Cause then you're like, okay, then I just have to go by my gut feel because that's all I have. So in this scenario, I know it's hard to pick in this random thing I'm giving you, but like if you had, I don't know if the step-by-step process is the right way to frame it, but if you had like a way to go from the subjective to objective to really say, here's how you go through and figure out something objective to measure, how would you teach someone to find that versus just opinion?
Yeah, let me zoom out a tiny bit before I answer that.
Please.
So something that I like to do with the leadership teams I work with is we identify the critical skills for the role. So if you tell me at the beginning of the year when we refresh this, that prospecting is these seven massive skills that we care the most about, then I go in and I say, how do you know what that looks like? How do you measure it? Don't tell me your people are bad at this because you have a feeling. Tell me how you know. And that often gets to those conversations of, wow, we really aren't measuring this, but I hear this all the time. How might we look at this a little bit differently? So really, we're not just serving the organization and being that consultant, I can get you to behavior change, but it's also the piece of, let me help you get better at what you're doing and the metrics that you're using. And works well when you have these strong cross-functional relationships and partnerships and the collaborative spirit, and everybody wants to come together and do their piece so much better because we know that that's how we're all going to thrive.
How do you balance that with the other side of that where it becomes micromanagement on activities that don't ultimately really reflect anything except for micromanaging on activities? Where's the balance between connecting the dots and then saying, okay, now you're just measuring everything I think I do and it doesn't impact my performance because I'm producing just fine. Where's the balance, do you think?
Okay, so and a skill is an ability to do something, right?
Right.
So you could say the skill is entering the information in all of the appropriate fields on time every week or every day, right? You can say that that's a skill, but is that really the one that's going to tell us if you're good at prospecting, if you're good at doing that research in advance?
Probably not.
Yeah.
So it's just being really clear. So I think the key here is that it's taking the time. This is really funny that you're saying this because I'm literally hearing myself training on someone how to do a discovery call, because a lot of times customers don't know how to measure their pains and problems either. So it's like almost you have to put the sales hat on and help your customers, the sales leaders, understand the metrics they're trying to drive to fix the pain that they're feeling. It's the same conversation. It's just different audience.
Yes. Kind, and again, kind of funny. you have the context to apply it there and speak their language. And that's huge.
Yeah, I love that. Switching gears just a hair, you talk about skills a lot. There's a lot of talk around competencies or competence or, you know, whatever framework you want to put on it. Do you look at those as synonymous, or you think of skills and competencies as different, or how do you view those?
I love that you're asking me this question because—
Am I teeing you up? I don't even know if I'm teeing you up or not.
You're totally teeing me up. Yeah. So skills and, as I see it, as I've learned it, skills and competencies are different things. And somebody actually told me, I'm not going to just plug my book, but somebody said this was their absolute favorite part of the book is when I pulled this out.
You can plug it. I don't mind. Plug away.
So skills are specific abilities to do things. They're very specific. The competency is more general. It's more of a topic. So you can say communication is a competency. Communication is not a skill. There are a bazillion skills within that competency. And here's the rub for me. Here's why I really like to talk skills and not competencies. And don't get me wrong, there is a place to train to competencies and do that effort. In general, what we do, I believe, needs to be skills-based, because when you focus on a competency, you're not targeting a specific skill. So the competence of communication, if you think about two skills underneath that, we can talk being able to build rapport, being able to write a succinct email that communicates something effectively, right? Those are both skills under communication. So if you do a training on communication and it's all about building rapport, and I needed to learn how to write better, write an email better, make a job aid better, anything like that, that training might be interesting to me, but it's not targeting the skill that I need. And so that's a very extreme example. But there are a lot of other examples where the skills are actually closer.
So I'm a competency fan, by the way, but I think about it similarly to you, to where I look at the competency as the category, and then I deep dive into either leading activity KPIs, which is AKA skills that I can measure mm-hmm. that are impactful to the competency that is impactful to the results, right? So that's how I think about yep. it. But I agree with you because I think too many times with people building competencies, they stop at the competency and they don't get super specific enough to say, but what are the skills inside of the competency that we actually care about that we know actually makes a difference? That's where I think a lot of people miss. So I am a competency fan, but I also focus on the measurable leading indicator KPI skills that can show that someone's actually masterful within that category of the competency, you know? So yep. I love that you're bringing that up because what you're saying is really, I think, impactful and important to understand the difference between the two. So yeah. that's cool. I know you've plugged your book, but I'd love to have you just point out real fast what your book is and what, for enablers who are listening, what would they get out of reading stuff like this? Because people always ask me, what's a good book enablement to read? And I know three or four off the top of my head. I have not gotten yours yet. I will definitely get it now. In fact, I literally just ordered it right as we're talking. So happy to do it. And I'll give you a review on one of our other channels. But I'd love to hear from you, like, as we end the call. What would someone get out of your book? And what is the message you want someone to walk away with and hopefully bring into their own enablement program?
Yeah. So remember when I came to the corporate world, I was telling you earlier, I did not want to do this. I did not want to work with adults in this world. Right. I want to do something completely different. And then I recognized the need and I kept being asked to help. And I ended up enabling the enablement team on every team I was on. I enabled our own team members. And so I took all of that experience and I said, if this behavior change piece is the rub with some sales leaders, and if mm-hmm. this is often the skill gap with enablers, because as we talked about, they often come from these sales roles, then let's plug that gap. And so I start with the very basics. What is a skill? How do you distinguish between skills? How do you use different skills? And then we build up to the more strategic piece. So the first half of the book is really just having those skills to be able to facilitate behavior change successfully. And then the second half of the book is what are the strategic things that we need to be focused on in the organization? And then I present this new vision of enablement. And this is actually, I keep getting this feedback on the book is that everyone thinks about culture when they're reading it. That's all they're thinking about. They're learning the other stuff, but culture is what this is exciting here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like I said earlier, I think enablement is literally the most important function in the organization as we move to this new economy with AI, everything being skills-based, all this stuff. This is huge. And so I think that enablement needs to be elevated and not just serve sales organizations, not just serve revenue organizations. I think we need to serve the entire company. I think the model is solid. And so if we get L&D in there in the right way and we can show that we can consistently facilitate behavior change, that's the team that I think should be owning the humanity in the business that truly sets everyone up for success.
Oh my gosh, I would add to that, but that was beautiful. If you see any of my LinkedIn posts, what you just said is like exactly what I say. Let's get enablement for everybody. We're most important. I love it. So I'm not going to add it because you did it more eloquently than I could, but I just want to say thank you for joining. Do you have a website?
Yeah, it's heartwisedevelopment.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. And thank awesome. You so much for having me.
I will put your website and your book Amazon link into the show notes. You've been awesome. So just thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.